after narrating the birth and activities of Kapila Muni at the end of Canto 3, Maitreya Muni, who was telling this, these pastimes, these activities of the Lord and his devotees, he was speaking to Vidura. So this is in response to Vidura's asking about how the descendants of Swayam Bhuvamano and Brahman, how the universe became populated. This was all narrated very elaborately in the third canto, the creation of the universe, and there's a saga creation, which is the primary creation, the ingredientsial, the upadan karan, the ingredients of the universe. And then there's also the secondary creation, which is done by Lord Brahma. So how actually did it proceed? This is what's being described herein. So in this canto, there's going to be the description mostly of the descendants of Swayam Bhuvamano, especially the descendants of Uttanapad. And then in the next canto, the other son of the descendants of the second or the older son of Swayam Bhuvamano, Priyavrata, are going to be described. So in the first chapter in this canto, several weeks ago, we read the about the daughters of Swayam Bhuvamano, Akuti, Prasuti, Devahuti, and we had already heard about Devahuti's marriage to Kadama Muni, and then we heard about Akuti's marriage to Atri Muni, I think, and then the son or the grandson of Jaggi was born, who was the Lord himself. And then we heard about all the progeny of Daksha, who Prasuti was married to Daksha, and there were many, many children, and we heard how one of the daughters, Sati, she died. So then the question was asked, what was the cause of her death, and why did she, even though she was married to Lord Shiva, why did she die? So the last six chapters we've been hearing about how the cause of Sati's death, although she had no children, although she was married to Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu, the greatest of Vaishnavas, Lord Shiva. So we heard the amazing and wonderful story about the Daksha Jaga, and how Daksha was, he had his head chopped off, and then a goat's head was placed on, and then finally the sacrifice, when everything was worked out, the sacrifice was completed and Lord Narayan came, and everyone glorified the Lord because he is the supreme. There are great, so many powerful people in this creation. We see this when we see someone more powerful than us. Sometimes we think, only if I could have that quality, be powerful like them, have their opulence, their wealth, their whatever. But actually, the Ishvara Paramakrishna, the supreme powerful, the supreme controller, is Krishna. So everyone, regardless of their position, Daksha, Lord Shiva, and all the demigods, Indra, Bhrigu, Muni, everyone, when Lord Narayan came, everyone offered their obeisances, and everyone offered prayers to him. So after that was, all that was described in the pastime was completed, then Maitreya goes back to describing Vidura, to Vidura, about the other sons of Brahma and how they increase the population of the universe. And then very quickly he will go back to describing those two sons of Swayam Bhuvamano, Uttanapada and Priyavrata, and then he will begin to describe the descendants of Uttanapada. And then he will move into telling the story of Dhruva Maharaj, because Dhruva Maharaj is one of the most wonderful, wonderful, wonderful pastimes, stories in the Bhagavatam. And there's much to learn. It's a very powerful story. And we'll hear about this Dhruva Maharaj so quickly. We'll jump right into the story. Because Dhruva Maharaj is so pious. Piety, punya, purity. Because without purity, one can't do anything in this world, actually. Even to do something bad, one needs power. And that power comes from some type of piety. But Dhruva Maharaj had very, very good Krishna bhakti piety, but he also was born in the family of great kings in the dynasty of Uttanapad, Swayambhuvamanu, Uttanapad, and then Dhruva Maharaj. So he was so powerful, and we'll hear about it. Before we hear about him, Maitreya Muni is going to tell Vidura not about someone who is pious, but how impiety, or some of the ways that impiety entered within this world. So let's listen to this, because it's very purifying. The great sage Maitreya said, the four Kumaras, the four great Kumara sages, headed by Shanak, as well as Narada, Ribhu, Hansa, Aruni, and Yati, all sons of Brahma, did not live at home, but became Udvarita, or Naishtika Brahmacharis, unadulterated celibates. So in describing how the universe became populated, there were certain branches of the tree that expanded from Lord Brahma that gave forth many fruits. And the universe was increased in its population. But some of the progeny of Lord Brahma did not have any children, they remained brahmacharis. And the most famous of those is the four Kumaras and Narada Muni. But another son of Brahma was Mrisha Adharmasya, Adharma, or irreligion, whose wife's name was Falsity. So when there is irreligion, there's always a marriage to falsity there. So what is the combination? When irreligion marries falsity, what is the result? The resulting combination. From their combination were born two demons. So irreligion and falsity give birth to two demons named Dambha, or bluffing, and Maya, cheating. So irreligion and falsity, they get along very well together. And they give birth to bluffing and cheating. These two demons were taken by a demon by the name of Nriti, who had no children. They were adopted by Nriti. So all these, the good, like Dhruva Maharaj, as we'll hear, and the bad, irreligion, falsity, etc., they are born, all of Lord Brahma. And ultimately everything is coming from Krishna, just like good and bad. Just like an example is given that light and darkness come from the sun, both. When as soon as there is the sunlight and we stand in the sun, behind us there is a shadow or darkness. So in that sense, the light and the darkness also comes from the sun. So similarly, from the Lord comes from all qualities, good and bad, ultimately. Another text 3. Maitreya told Vidura, O great soul, from Dambha, what is Dambha? Bluffing, Maya, cheating. When from Dambha and Maya were born, so what happens when irreligion and falsity comes together, bluffing and cheating comes, and then what is the next level of progeny after bluffing and cheating? Greed and
nikriti or cunning. From their combination came children by the name. So what happens when there's greed and there's cunning? What results from that? Krodha, anger, and hingsa, envy. So what is ahimsa?
Non-violence.
And himsa means violent, and envy. Because in the heart of someone who is envious, he wants to naturally see harm come to others. He cannot tolerate the happiness of others. This is actually what envy means. When we see someone that's happy, we feel miserable. And when we see someone who is miserable, we feel happy. This is an envious mentality. So, himsa, so violence towards others comes from an envious mentality. We can't, we don't want to allow others to live. We see this with people. Just because they like the taste of some kind of meat or something like that, or some animals, they will kill them just to eat them. Why? Just imagine what it would be like if someone was stalking you continuously. Just, and what was in their eyes, and it would come out, was in their mind, and it would come out their eyes, that they are looking to kill you because they want to eat your flesh. Just imagine how terrified you'd be. You never know when they were stalking you, when they were near or far. And just imagine the mentality of looking at another because, to kill them, just to eat them, and when it's not even necessary, just because you like the taste. It's pleasing to you. I like killing. I like it. What's the problem? My parents taught me like this. I grew up like this. What's the problem? I like it. So how envious is this mentality? No right to live, so therefore violent. So from the combination of krodha and himsa came kali, quarrel, and drukti, harsh speech. O greatest of all good men, Vidura is addressed by Maitreya Muni, by the combination of kali and harsh speech were born children named Mrityu. What is Mrityu? Death. So the ultimate result of all this is death, but it's not the ultimate result. There's more. Death and bhiti, fear, because no one knows when death is going to come. And from the combination of Mrityu and bhiti came children named Yatana. So it's not over with death and fear. There is Yatana, or excessive pain, in Niraya, hell. So it's not a very good lineage. Maitreya Muni continues in text 5, My dear Vidur, I have summarily explained the causes of devastation. So these ultimately are born of adama, or irreligiosity, or irreligion, or ignorance. And they ultimately, like ignorance does, or as ignorance does, it causes devastation or ruination. This is the effect of the mode of ignorance. Just horrible things. There is no use, practically speaking. At least in the mode of passion, one works hard, one has a feverish mentality, but at least one does something. And then with the something that one does, perhaps some fruit or products come. And those products can at least, if one can just summon up a little bit of detachment, can offer them to Krishna. So some good can come from passion, but what good can come from devastation? Ruination, trouble, difficulties, ignorance, fear, death, hell, cheating, dumba, bluffing, harshness, rough speech.
It's actually described in the Bhagavad Gita, the symptom of speech in the mode of ignorance. Those in the mode of ignorance, they're expert at insulting others. Same point. So Maitreya says, I have summarily explained the causes of devastation, all from ignorance. One who hears this description three times attains piety and washes the sinful contamination from his soul. So we've just heard it one time. That's there. So two more to go and then there won't be any more problems. Prabhupada explains in his purport. The creation takes place on the basis of goodness, but devastation takes place because of irreligion. That is the way of material creation and devastation. Here it is stated that the cause of devastation is adharma, or irreligion. The descendants of irreligion and falsity, born one after another, are bluffing, cheating, greed, cunning, anger, envy, quarrel, harsh speech, death, fear, severe pain, and hell. All these descendants are described as signs of devastation. If a person is pious and hears about these causes of devastation, he will feel hatred for all of these, and that will cause his advancement in a life of piety. So this is how it works. It's not just mechanical, well, I've heard it, and, you know, where's my purity? It's not mechanical like that. But there are intermediate steps that one would naturally fall through. If one has some piety and one hears about these things, what does one become? Frightened. Frightened, embarrassed, and doesn't want these things to exist in one's consciousness anymore. And then, by not wanting them, because the gross is based on the subtle, by giving up the subtle desires and wishing that they were not there, Krishna so kindly, yayitamam prapadyante, reciprocates. And one doesn't want these things or hates them, and that will cause his advancement in a life of piety. So there is a good use for hatred, but it has to be pointed in the right direction, and it should be against these bad qualities. It's the proper use of hatred. And before we have the audacity to hate these bad qualities in others, we should make sure that our heart is free of them. Because it's so easy to see these bad things in others and say, this person's like this, this person's like that. But then, what we don't see is how much we embody these ourselves, very embarrassingly. Piety, if a person is pious and hears about these causes of devastation, he will feel hatred for all of these, and that will cause his advancement in a life of piety. Piety refers to the process of cleansing the heart. Piety means goodness. As recommended by Lord Chaitanya, one has to cleanse the dust from the mirror of the mind, and then advancement on the path of liberation begins. Here also the same process is recommended. Malam means contamination or impurity. We should learn to despise all the causes of devastation, beginning from irreligion and cheating, and then we shall be able to make advancement in a life of piety. So why is Prabhupada recommending that we must hate them and despise them? What do you think? Or another way to think of it, what is the opposite? If you have affection for these qualities, will they stay in the heart? Do you stay with people that you have affection with? Do you talk with them? Do you deal with them? Do you wish, do you think about them? Or do you stay with people that you have hatred and you despise? You don't want to see them, the people we despise. So we don't want to associate with these qualities. We should learn to despise the causes of devastation, beginning with irreligion and cheating, and then we shall be able to make advancement in a life of piety.
the possibility of our attaining Krishna consciousness will be easier, because the good qualities are born of goodness, and these bad qualities, devastation qualities, are born of ignorance. So if we have ignorance, very, very difficult to make progress in Krishna consciousness. Very difficult. Very difficult. And contemporary civilization, it cultivates ignorance in us and in others. So very, very, very difficult. So if we advance in piety and goodness, if we advance in goodness, we shall be able to make advancement. The possibility of our attaining Krishna consciousness will be easier. So these qualities aren't directly Krishna consciousness. If one, the good qualities, one is truthful or honest or whatever, clean, these aren't directly Krishna conscious, but they are supportive of Krishna consciousness. And the absence of these qualities make it very difficult to become Krishna conscious. The present life is repeated birth and death, but if we seek the path of liberation, we may be saved from repeated suffering. Now, having finished with these inauspicious qualities and trying to remove them from our consciousness, not that it's ever finished in one sense. If we notice, if we read about the great devotees, they're always very, very conscious or aware, thinking themselves possessing all these horrible qualities. We think, how is it possible that they're thinking that? Like Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, if you chant my names, you will go to hell. Thakur Haridas wouldn't sit with the other devotees. And they think, don't touch me, you'll become contaminated, don't associate with me. How is it possible they could be thinking like that? One, we imagine that they would be thinking how pure they are in one sense, but no, they are thinking how impure they are. They're experiencing themselves like that. It means they're painfully aware, just like if there's a room that's perfectly clean. Every little speck of dirt is noticeable. Every speck, or if you have a white cloth that's sparkling clean, bright white, if there's some specks or sprinkles of mud, they become so apparent. But if you have a cloth that's muddy, so muddy, you don't even see, and one more speck of mud. Even though there may be so little there in a elevated person, he's painfully aware of it. And therefore, the result of that is humility. And the result of that humility is that he is able to advance still further. Because why? Because he's seeing only... And sometimes that happens, you know, when you may have a cloth of some sort, and there's a little bit of a stain, a small stain on it, and 99.9% of the cloth is clean. But there's one little stain, and as soon as you see the cloth, what do you think of? The stain. You don't think of the cleanliness. So similarly, a great devotee really only thinks of this, what he sees as the stains in his consciousness. And that gives him the ability to not depend upon himself, but to depend upon Krishna. And that makes him into an actual sadhu, a holy person. So Maitreya continued, O best of the Kuru dynasty. So before hearing about Dhruva Maharaj, we've gotten some hints what we have to remove from our consciousness. O best of the Kuru dynasty, I shall now describe before you the descendants of Swayambhuva Manu, who was born of a part of a plenary portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We'll read a little of Prabhupada's purport. The great sage Maitreya is now going to explain about the descendants of Manu, this Manu, all of whom are widely celebrated for their pious activities. So there'll be much talk from here and for the next two cantos of the descendants of Manu. They're very pious. Before speaking of these pious descendants, Maitreya has already described the descendants of impious activities, representing anger, envy, unpalatable speech, quarrel, fear, and death. Purposely, therefore, he is next relating the history of the life of Dhruva Maharaj, the most pious king within this universe. Swayambhuva Manu had two sons by his wife, Satarupa, and the names of these sons were Uttanapada and Priyavrata. Because both of them were descendants of a plenary expansion of Vasudev, that means Manu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they were very competent to rule the universe, to maintain and protect the citizens. So these are the two male children of Swayambhuva Manu, and he had a total of five children altogether. So we've heard in the first chapter of this canto, we've heard about the descendants of the three girls, the three daughters. Now, King Uttanapada, now we're going to hear about King Uttanapada. And the reason why, it's not said here, but later will be said, the reason why we're going to hear about Uttanapada is because Priyavrata the elder did not get involved in politics. He became a renunciant because he decided that he would not, he wanted to devote his life solely to developing his Krishna consciousness. So he refused being the king, to be the king. And there was someone competent, his younger brother Uttanapada, to do it. So we're going to hear about the lineage of Uttanapada, beginning with Dhruva Maharaj. And then when Uttanapada's dynasty runs out, which will bring us to the end of this canto, in the fourth canto, then there's no one pious enough or powerful enough to rule. And at that time, Swayambhuva Manu and Brahma approach Uttanapada, who is performing austerities in the mountains, and they say, please become king. He's been doing that for millions of years. And they say, now you have to stop and you have to take up some other responsibility, please. So that will be right in the first chapter of the fifth canto. We'll hear that. So Uttanapada, now we hear about Uttanapada. He had two queens named Suniti and Suruchi. Suruchi was much more dear to the king. Suniti, who had a son named Dhruva, was not his favorite. Purport. The great sage Maitreya wanted to describe the pious activities of kings. Priyavrata was the first son of Swayambhuva Manu, and Uttanapada was the second. But the great sage Maitreya immediately began to speak of Dhruva Maharaj, the son of Uttanapada, because Maitreya was very eager to describe pious activities. The incidents in the life of Dhruva Maharaj are very attractive for devotees. From his pious actions, one can learn how one can detach himself from material possessions and how one can enhance one's devotional service by severe austerities and penances. By hearing the activities of pious Dhruva, one can enhance one's faith in God and can directly connect with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus one can very soon be elevated to the transcendental platform of devotional service. So hearing about Dhruva Maharaj is so powerful. It can elevate us to devotional service. The example of Dhruva Maharaj's austerities can immediately generate a feeling of devotional service in the hearts of the hearers. So perhaps tomorrow or next week we'll hear about the austerities that Dhruva Maharaj performs. And they are so heavy, so difficult. And perhaps we can't do them. Not perhaps. We are not capable of performing them. But just his example Hearing what he did will generate devotional service in the hearts of those who hear. So let us listen very carefully. Now here the story of Dhruva Maharaj, the pastime, begins. Once upon a time, King Uttanapad was patting the son of Suruchi, Uttama, placing him on his lap. Dhruva Maharaj was also trying to get on the king's lap, but the king did not very much welcome him. While the child, Dhruva Maharaj, was trying to get on the lap of the father, his father, Suruchi, his stepmother, became very envious of the child. And with great pride, she began to speak so as to be heard by the king himself. So the king had two queens, two co-wives. Suruchi was younger, and she was favored by the king, and her son was Uttam. And the elder of the two was named Suniti, and she was neglected by the king, and her son was Dhruva. And when Uttama was sitting on the lap of the king, Dhruva tried to get up as well. And the king was not happy, and Suruchi began to speak with great pride right in front of the king. She said to Dhruva Maharaj, "My dear child, you don't deserve to sit on the throne or the lap of the king. Surely you are also the son of the king, but because you did not take your birth from my womb, you are not qualified to sit on your father's lap. My dear child, you are unaware that you were born not of my womb, but of another woman. Therefore, you should know that your attempt to sit on the lap of the king is doomed to failure." Speaking like this to a young boy, what was he trying to do? And he wasn't just an ordinary young boy, he was a powerful king's son. Just imagine how the arrows of her words would have entered his heart. "You are trying to fulfill a desire which is impossible to fulfill. If you at all desire to rise to the throne of the king, then you have to undergo severe austerity. So if you do want to get on the throne, if you want to be king, if you do want that and wish to be successful, this is what you have to do. First, you have to perform very severe austerities. Very severe. First of all, you must satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan. You go to God. And then, perform austerities, you go to God and satisfy Him." And one would think, okay, that would be enough. All you have to do is satisfy God. And she says, no. So envious. "When you are favored by Him because of such worship, what will be the great blessing, the great boon, the great showing of favoritism that He gives you because of you having pleased Him? Then you shall have to take your next birth from my womb." In other words, you have to die. You die after pleasing the Lord. Then you die and you take your birth from my womb, and then you can become king. We'll read some little purports that really speak loudly here. The king, of course, was equally affectionate towards both his sons, Uttama and Dhruva. So he had a natural inclination to take Dhruva as well as Uttama on his lap. But because of his favoritism towards his queen Suruchi, he could not welcome Dhruva Maharaj, despite his feelings. King Uttanapad's feeling was understood by Suruchi, and therefore with great pride she began to speak of the king's affection for her. This is the nature of a woman. If a woman understands that her husband regards her as a favorite and is especially affectionate to her, She takes undue advantage. These symptoms are visible even in such an elevated society as the family of Swayambhuva Manu. Therefore, it is concluded that the feminine nature of woman is present everywhere. Queen Saruchi was proudly informed Dhruva Maharaj that to be the king's son was not the qualification for sitting on the lap or throne of the king. Rather, this privilege was dependent on one's having taken birth from her womb. And again, not even pleasing God was sufficient. In other words, she indirectly informed Dhruva Maharaj that although he happened to be born of the king, he was considered an illegitimate son because of his birth from the womb of another queen. The small child, Dhruva Maharaj, was naturally affectionate towards his father, and he did not know there was a distinction between his two mothers. This is the nature of the of a joint type of family. The children in the different families, when they're living together, and I've seen this, they treat each other like brothers and sisters, even though they're cousins. They don't make these distinctions. So he was just a boy. He didn't know there was any difference between one mother and another mother. As if one didn't love him and the other one did. He couldn't conceive of that. This distinction was pointed out by Queen Saruchi, who informed him that since he was a child, he did not understand the distinction between the two queens. Your mother is lowly, and I am exalted, the king's favorite. This is another statement of Queen Saruchi's pride. Saruchi was so envious of Dhruva Maharaj that she indirectly asked him to change his body. According to her, first of all he had to die, then take his next body in her womb. And only then would it be possible for Dhruva Maharaj to ascend the throne of his father. Now it's also interesting to note that in the previous pastime that we heard, which was that? Yeah, and the Daksha Jagya. Now, Daksha became angry at Lord Shiva and he insulted him. Right? And Lord Shiva, and eventually, because Lord Shiva, and he was so angry that he refused to see Sati, and as a result, Lord Shiva ended up killing Daksha. Now, he was so angry. Now let's see how Dhruva Maharaj deals with it, and we can see if there are any parallels and non-parallel points. So Dhruva Maharaj was actually insulted, really heavily insulted. Lord Shiva was actually insulted too. Actually, during the sacrifice itself, Lord Shiva didn't become perturbed. He didn't get disturbed when Daksha criticized him so nastily. Dhruva Maharaj, just as a boy, becomes very, very upset. As a snake, when struck by a stick, breathes very heavily, Dhruva Maharaj, having been struck by the strong words of his stepmother, began to breathe very heavily because of great anger. He looked at his father to see if his father would do anything to protect him, to combat it, to say, no, do not speak like this. He looked at his father and saw that his father was silent and did not protest. So Dhruva immediately left the palace and went to Suniti, his mother. When Dhruva Maharaj, he ran from the throne room. When he reached his mother, his lips were trembling in anger. And he was crying very grievously. Queen Suniti immediately lifted her son on her lap While the palace residents who had heard all the harsh words of Saruchi related everything in detail, thus Suniti also became greatly aggrieved. So she caught the pain that her son Dhruva must have been experiencing when she heard what had happened. This incident was unbearable to Suniti's patience. She began to burn as if in a forest fire because she was thinking, this boy is so unfortunate because he is born from me. So she also felt so horrible, disgraced, terrible. He's suffering due to me. That's the last thing a mother can tolerate. And in her grief, she became just like a burnt leaf and so lamented. As she remembered the words of her co-wife, her bright lotus-like face filled with tears, and thus she spoke. She was also breathing very heavily, and she did not know the factual remedy for the painful situation. Not finding any remedy, she said to her son, "My dear son," because what was Dhruva Maharaj? He was angry. She saw his lips were trembling, fucking biting his lips. He was so angry, he was a warrior. Now what would you be worried about if you were the mother? That he'd want to go and kill everyone. He was so angry. Or he became envious in return. She was saying, no, wishing harm for others in return. No, she said. "My dear son, don't wish for anything inauspicious for others. Anyone who inflicts pain upon others suffers himself from that pain." That is very interesting. That's something that we should make very careful note of. Anyone who inflicts pain upon others suffers himself from that pain. Don't wish anything inauspicious for others. "My dear boy," so she calmed him down, "don't think badly about him, about your father, Saruchi especially, maybe even Uttam, because you can get envious of him. No, she said. "My dear boy, whatever has been spoken by Saruchi is so, because the king, your father, does not consider me his wife or even his maidservant. He feels ashamed to accept me. Therefore, it is a fact that you have taken birth from the womb of an unfortunate woman, and by being fed from her breast, you have grown up. So therefore," she's saying, "that you are unfortunate due to your birth from me, who I'm so unfortunate. But," so he's saying, "Saruchi is right. But she is even more right than that. Listen further. My dear boy, whatever has been spoken by Saruchi, your stepmother, although very harsh to hear, is factual. Therefore, if you desire at all to sit on the same throne as your stepbrother Uttam, then give up your envious attitude. Don't wish harm for others. Give up your envy. If you want to achieve what you want, give up your envy." So that's giving up. "Now what should you do?" Suniti said, "You should immediately try to execute the instructions of your stepmother." So Saruchi gave him good advice. What did she say? "Without further delay, you must engage yourself in worshipping the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead." She said, because Saruchi said, "You have to seek the favor of the Lord." Prabhupada's purport. The harsh words used by Saruchi to her stepson were true. Because unless one is favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot achieve any success in life. Man proposes, God disposes. Suniti, the mother of Dhruva Maharaj, agreed with her co-wife's advice that Dhruva engage himself in the worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Indirectly, the words of Saruchi were a benediction for Dhruva, because of the influence of his stepmother's words, he became a great devotee. So this brings up another very interesting point, that for Dhruva Maharaj, at this particular time, he would have traded anything. He thought he was in the most unfortunate circumstance. And indeed, one can understand clearly why he felt that way. Tortured, pierced by harsh, unnecessary words. So what a horrible condition to be in. But that horrible condition is going to give birth to the greatest fortune for the boy. Why? And what was his special piety? Because in that horrible situation, instead of becoming angry and fighting back, he used the power of that anger, and it was really powerful for him. He used that power to take shelter of Krishna. Even though it was contaminated by material desire, yet he used that power to take shelter of Krishna. And what took birth out of that anger and even that envy was something very, very wonderful. Very wonderful. So in this world, in our lives, so many bad things happen. So many horrible things happen. And we sometimes would like to blow up the world, maybe, or at least certain people in it, or something like that, or retaliate in some way. But out of those worst of things, the greatest benefits can actually come if we somehow powerfully harness the energy of the anger and take shelter of Krishna. And we'll see what Dhruva Maharaj did in his determination. The Supreme Suniti continued. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is so great that simply by worshipping his lotus feet, your great-grandfather, Lord Brahma, acquired the necessary qualifications to create the universe. Although he is unborn and is the chief of all living creatures, he is situated in that exalted post because of the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whom even great yogis worship by controlling the mind and regulating the life air, prana. Suniti informed her son, "Your grandfather Swayambhuva Manu executed great sacrifices with distribution of charity, and thereby with unflinching faith and devotion he worshipped and satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead." So what a heritage! Your great-grandfather worshipped the Lord and pleased him and became so powerful. Your father, your great-grandfather and your grandfather Swayambhuva Manu did this. He worshipped and satisfied the Lord. And by acting in that way, he achieved the greatest success in material happiness and afterwards achieved liberation, which is impossible to obtain by worshipping the demigods. So success, she is telling him, comes from focused worship without deviation. Worship of the Lord. Not worshipping demigods. My dear boy, you, as your forefathers have done, should also take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is very kind to his devotees. Persons seeking liberation from the cycle of birth and death always take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord in devotional service. Becoming purified by executing your allotted occupation, just situate the Supreme Personality of Godhead in your heart, and without deviating for a moment, engage always in His service. My dear Dhruva, as far as I am concerned, I do not find anyone who can mitigate, who can remove your distress, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose eyes are like lotus petals. Many demigods, such as Lord Brahma, seek the pleasure of the Goddess of Fortune, but the Goddess of Fortune herself, with a lotus flower in her hand, is always ready to render service to the Supreme Lord. So, you are so unfortunate, she told Dhruva, and the reason is that you've taken your birth from me. But those who seek fortune should seek the favor of the Lord Himself, because fortune herself, Lakshmi Devi, takes shelter of Him. So, go, take shelter of the Lord. Listen to Prabhupada's purport to 22. The system of bhakti yoga described by Queen Suniti to her son is the standard way of God realization. Everyone can continue in his constitutional occupational duties and at the same time keep the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart. This was also instructed by the Lord Himself to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. Go on fighting, but keep me within your mind. That should be the motto of every honest person seeking perfection in Krishna consciousness. In this connection, Queen Suniti advised her son that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Prithivatsal, which indicates that he is very kind to his devotees. She said, "You came to me crying, having been insulted by your stepmother, but I am unable to do any good for you. But Krishna is so kind to his devotees that if you go to him, then the combined kindness of millions of mothers like me will be surpassed by his affectionate and tender dealings. When everyone else fails to mitigate one's misery, Krishna is able to help the devotee." Queen Suniti also stressed the process of approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not easy, but is sought after by great sages who are very advanced in spiritual realization. Queen Suniti also indicated by her instruction that Dhruva Maharaj was only a small child, 5 years old, and it was not possible for him to purify himself by the way of karmakanda. But by the process of bhakti yoga, even a child less than 5 years old, or anyone of any age, can be purified. That is the special significance of bhakti yoga. Therefore, she advised him not to accept worship of the demigods or other process, but simply to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the result would be all perfection. As soon as one places the Supreme Personality of Godhead within one's heart, everything becomes easy and successful. And we'll read, as the final thing, we'll read some of the purport to text 23 of Prabhupada's purport, beginning in the second paragraph of the purport. Material opulences are controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead through His different potencies, and specifically the Goddess of Fortune. Therefore, those who are after material opulence seek the pleasure or mercy of the Goddess of Fortune. Even the highly placed demigods worship the Goddess of Fortune. But the Goddess of Fortune, Mahalakshmi herself, is always seeking the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anyone, therefore, who takes to the worship of the Supreme Lord automatically receives the blessings of the Goddess of Fortune. At this stage of his life, Dhruva Maharaj was seeking material opulences, and his mother advised rightly that even for material opulences, it is better to worship not the demigods, but the Supreme Lord. Although a pure devotee does not seek benediction from the Supreme Lord for material advancement, It is stated in Bhagavad Gita that pious persons go to the Lord even for material benedictions. A person who goes to the Supreme Personality of Godhead for material gain is gradually purified in association with the Supreme Lord. Thus he becomes free from all material desires and is elevated to the platform of spiritual life. Unless one is raised to the spiritual platform, it is not possible for him to completely transcend all material contamination. Suniti, the mother of Dhruva, was a far-seeing woman, and therefore she advised her son to worship the Supreme Lord and no one else. The Lord is described herein as lotus-eyed, padma-palasalochanad. When a person is fatigued, if he sees a lotus flower, all his fatigue can be immediately reduced to nil. Similarly, when an aggrieved person sees the lotus face of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, immediately all his grief is reduced. Okay, we'll stop here. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Dhruva Maharaj ki jai. So tomorrow we'll continue hearing what Dhruva Maharaj did after hearing these instructions from Mother Suniti.
In Guru Maharaj's lineage,
how did those qualities come in this lineage?
Enviousness and anger, because
these were supposed to be in another lineage. But they seem to be just on the border of consciousness, always. And if we're not careful, they will attack us. This is actually described, I think, more in the third canto, how Brahma created these type of things, and some of the things, for instance, if I remember correctly, it was like night, like twilight. The one of Brahma's forms, there was a form that was very attractive, the opposite sex, and it took the form of twilight. Brahma cast off that body and it took the form of twilight, and the demons embraced it with twilight, that type of lust. So there are certain things that will occurred in Dhruva Maharaj's life, and it will occur in every person's life. That we are faced with some choices, and if we embrace the wrong choice, these bad qualities attack us. So we have to be very careful, in other words, because this is the material world, and in the material world there is no pure sattva-gun, no pure goodness. So the goodness that is here always has at least tinges and traces of passion and ignorance. So that means that if we inflame or cultivate or act in such a way that that activities born of ignorance are cultivated, they can come even in the best of people. That's the best I can say. So it's not even if one has a good family, if one associates with anger and greed and lust, one can get himself in trouble. But because he was pious, he turned to Krishna with good advice from his stepmother. So he had good instructions there. He was envious and Daksha was envious, but he was proud too. Dhruva Maharaj was proud. How dare they do this to me? Yeah, but he had the spirit of a Kshatriya, a warrior. Yeah, he was just a boy, but yet he had that. Because what we are when we're older, we have in seedling form when we're young. It's not so manifest, but it's there. So no matter how good our lineage is, we're in the material world.
So we have to be very careful, because the sparks of badness are always are there, of ignorance and passion. So therefore, a good person is very careful. A good person will be a careful person and avoid association of the mode of passion, ignorance. But ultimately, one's, generally speaking, one's purity will pull one through if one has good sanskaras or impressions in one's consciousness, as Dhruva did. Do you have a second question?
Yeah, the second question was the last purpose that you were reading, that Dhruva Maharaj, even though his desire was to gain material opulence, that if one prays to the Supreme Lord, even for material opulence, gradually, the idea is that material desires will diminish. And
because there's two sides of what's being said. One side is the positive instruction that which has been stated in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, kama sava kama va moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogini ajaita purusha para, that even if you have material desires, even if you have no desires, even if you desire liberation, you tivrena bhakti yogina, you take shelter with great power and force in bhakti. And that will clean away the impurities. You'll get those things, but you'll get them in such a way by Krishna's grace that you, your heart will be cleansed. And we'll see that happen, said Dhruva Maharaj. And on the other side, well, that's what we should do, but what we shouldn't do is worship the demigods.
Actually, I asked that question in context because I also once... similar topic came up in a class of given by Manu Maharaj. And the question I had asked Manu Maharaj was, let's say if someone has strong material desire and prays towards the Lord to gain those material desires, is there a chance that those desires can be automatically turned to a pure desire of wanting to serve the Lord?
Yes, but certainly, but very rarely. It's not so easy to get rid of material desires. You can push them away, but they have a strange habit of returning. The heart has to be purified, actually, because desire is born out of passion and ignorance. And unless the heart is purified, they'll come. So what did Bhanu Maharaj say?
He said, unless to begin with, if you don't have the desire to serve the Lord purely, then it won't come. So even to begin with, if one just prays to the Lord for material desires, he'll gain that. But the desire to serve Him purely, it may not come.
But when you deal with Krishna, then he sees the good also. And there are some, and we'll see that with Dhruva Maharaj. Because of he did his attempt, and after all, Dhruva, as we'll see, Dhruva Maharaj's attempt to worship the Lord was only materially motivated. But yet he achieved Sakshat Darshan, direct vision of the Lord, and the Lord appeared right before him. So one can't say that it doesn't happen. But Krishna, the point is that if we satisfy the demigods, we'll have our material desire. If we worship the demigods, we'll have our material desire fulfilled, but our heart won't be purified. But if we worship Krishna, we'll have our material desires fulfilled. But He'll do it in such a way, He'll exact some purity from us. So we learn our lesson. And this is basically what one of the things that the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj will illustrate. But what did Dhruva Maharaj have? He had the association of Narada Muni. First his Shiksha Guru, his mother, and then Narada Muni. And by the grace of Narada Muni, one can say that Bhakti Lata Bij is planted in his heart, the seed of pure devotional service. And that will sprout. Once it is there, it will sprout. It's a little late. Anyway, tomorrow we can speak more. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.